Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of the Apartment Academy, the multifamily industry's only operations-focused podcast and your Institute of Higher NOI. I'm your host, the Dean of the Apartment Academy, Daniel Cunningham, and today's guest lecturer is Dom Beveridge. Dom is the principal in 20 for 20 Consulting, and if you're a listener to this podcast, my guess is you are probably already a reader of Don's newsletter, which on a monthly basis is providing insights in everything from AI to leasing strategies, and most recently, a nice analysis of what's happening on the centralization front. So if you are interested in what is happening with centralization, how you can benefit from that, how there is a phased approach to centralization that you should consider, today's lecture from Dom is going to be very interesting. Here he is. Well, Professor Beveridge, welcome here to the virtual classroom here at the Apartment Academy. It's great to have you here at the Academy.
It's great to be here. I'm unaccustomed to being called professor, so that's great.
Well, everyone here has something to teach somebody. That's our whole goal. So you're definitely a professor for today. So enjoy it. Your ceremonial plaque will be arriving shortly in the mail. We have known each other a while, Dom. You've sort of have transitioned from kind of the vendor side of the business to on a PMS side for a while, and now like your own consulting firm. But tell us a little bit how you came to be in the industry, Louis. Let's start there so we can just kind of establish your background and how it is you came to be an authority in the things that now you're writing about.
Yeah, so I came to the multifamily industry by way of revenue management. So I spent most of my career either in technology or consulting. And my sort of domain expertise for most of my career has been in pricing, analytics, and revenue management. So I think multifamily was like the sixth industry that I'd worked in pricing optimization. And yeah, I came to the industry by way of as a rainmaker, had both a hotel and a multifamily business, and which was based around LRO. And I knew those guys through the hotel side of their business, and I joined in about 2012 to start doing multifamily stuff, and like everybody else, never left the industry.
Yes, but you didn't start with a free apartment with nowhere to go out of college, which is 90% of the story, how the story start. And you did something I thought at the time was, I still think it was really groundbreaking, but never really stuck. And I wonder in light of what's happened with the RealPage lawsuit, if it, maybe you're counting your blessings that it didn't. But the MDX, that exchange that you had that you were orchestrating for a while, this idea that you could establish the same kind of, you know, pricing benchmarks that you have in the hotel hospitality industry in multifamily, I thought was brilliant. But, you know, wrong time, lack of cooperation on data exchange, whatever it was. But I wondered, like I said, given how much scrutiny the idea of revenue management and data sharing to arrive at pricing has received now, if that was probably maybe dodged a little zing, a little bullet.
Yeah, so it's a really interesting point. So you've probably seen I've been writing a lot on the general state of what's going on with revenue management. Obviously, I understand the domain really well, but the unusual thing is through that MDX experience, I spent a lot of time with attorneys understanding how data sharing works. And so I actually understand a lot about what those lawsuits are actually about, just the relevant law that's an issue. So yes, it was always clear that there was some risk in some of the things that are going on in the industry. That's definitely not to say that any of what they're being accused of is true, but nevertheless, it's an area where there is law that you really have to understand.
Well, speaking of the stuff that you're writing about now, you publish, I think, a widely appreciated newsletter, the 20 for 20, and the latest one, now this is April 2024, and things are moving so fast in some respects, I think it's important that we date this conversation so that we don't feel too foolish and we would come back and listen to what we had to say a year from now. But there were a number of very compelling things you covered in this one. And I want to start with talking about your analysis of kind of the centralization trend. People started talking about that in sort of generic terms, you know, a year or two ago, although components of it, we just didn't know it were sort of underway and have been for years. But people started talking collectively, spurned on by COVID and this idea that maybe we don't need everybody on site and maybe we have to do more with less because fewer people are coming to industry and all of these things. But you broke it down into, look, there's actually three kinds of phases of that are in centralization, and they are happening at different rates. Would you mind kind of just recapping those findings? That was very interesting.
Yeah, no, I think it helped. It's been this developing story. So over the last like three editions of 20 for 20, there's been sort of more and more detail as people get more and more experience of trying to centralize stuff. I remember like 2 years ago, the main sort of aha about it was, you know, it was something that people were talking about. Relatively few people were actually doing, but you'd seen, you know, Avalon Bay and UDR had publicly talked about how they were removing people from properties and centralizing various of their services. And when you spoke to people, what you came to appreciate, you know, it's like I went into researching that paper thinking, right, so if the AVB and UDR claims like of what they're doing are one end of the continuum and status quo is at the other, let's find out where everybody is along that, you know, that continuum between those two things. And what I found out by asking people was that there is no sort of continuum. If you're a public REIT and you control everything, then you get to do things, and your properties are quite close together, then you get to do things like centralization. And if you're a fee manager where you have a stakeholder for every property that you run, irrespective of whether or not your properties are close together, you don't have the same freedom to do stuff that REITs do. So what it looked like was you just have varying opportunities depending on what kind of business you are, how close together your properties are, and to what extent you call the shots on what your technology stack is. So that was the general takeaway a couple of years ago. Last year, I started to break down, all right, the bits of work that people are looking at are leasing, admin, and maintenance, right? So those are the things that people are trying to work on. Let's get a read on what people are doing. And the thing was at the time, so this is probably about 18 months ago when I was doing those interviews, all the talk was of leasing. Was, you know, leasing centralization, like every webinar, industry event, you were going to, you know, AIM, for example, and it sounded like everybody was already well into the process of centralizing their leasing operations. And then when we actually ran the research, when we asked 20 different leaders to say, okay, tell me what you did last year, it turns out hardly anyone had actually changed that much. Like lots of people had rolled out technology, like the technology that supports centralization. So if you think about rolling out something like a CRM that has a more centralized structure to it, I can get benefits like, you know, sharing leads between different properties, but that doesn't necessarily entail me changing the way that I staff properties as far as leasing agents go. So what I found last year was that you got a lot of people who'd implemented the technology, but very few who'd actually changed much about how their operating model worked. But the really big surprise was that the area that people were changing was admin. So it seemed that when you actually start to think about changing your operating model, all right, so how do I get to a model where maybe I have two people instead of three for my 300 unit property, the tasks that people tend to gravitate towards are the high friction, relatively low value add, you know, month-end accounting, deposit handling, payments, collection, like all of this kind of stuff that candidly in most businesses and tend to lend themselves to shared services anyway. And so this sort of people began to sort of figure out, well, how do I build sort of shared service for property admin? And that tended, overwhelmingly to be the thing that people started with if they were trying to change the model. It's also just one other thing I'll say about it. There were two things that I think I noticed that make people think about it that way. One, there's actually no good reason to do that work at property in the first place, right? It's nobody's going to renew their lease because of the great month-end accounting that you do, right? It doesn't have that much of a service element to it. It's always been this slight kind of constraint on career paths as well. Like if you've got a really good leasing agent, the path to be a community manager is via this job that's really heavy on bookkeeping, right? So it's a sort of slightly circuitous career development path, and people were sort of finding a better way to do that is, well, there are assistant property managers that like doing that stuff and are really good at it. So why don't we focus them on doing more of that stuff? And our plan is to make the people who staff our properties more sort of sales and service orientated and get the admin off their plate.
Yeah. I think, but I ran a management company 11 years ago here in Los Angeles, and at the time, I started in 2008. When we started, all of the accounting was on site, all of the invoices were coming on site, and all the accounting was being done on site and reporting. Like we were expecting them to do, a whole variety of reports. And I remember creating these dashboards to how can we better report this stuff? These people are terrible at this. Like they should not be doing this. And then came along services like AvidXchange and these services that allowed you to centralize the invoicing, which is sort of the first thing that I think broke all of this loose. You need to kind of get away from this. Well, who's going to collect all the invoices? And, once Avid and these other services arrived and now you could process these things remotely, that's what really broke that open. But that was 12 years ago. And I was amazed by your report, how many folks still haven't made that leap. Because as you just said, there is no good reason to do that on site. You don't add value to the property and the people who are doing it are probably bad at it. So it is interesting.
Yeah, no, it is. I hadn't actually thought of this, but I was listening to Jerry Davis talk about this on a panel a couple of weeks ago, the former COO of UDR. And he was saying the other thing you have to understand with those admin tasks is you don't do them every day, right? So they're monthly activities, for example. And if you've just got a job that consists of many things that you do relatively infrequently, you never do them well. Like there's no, you just don't do any of this stuff frequently enough that you ever get really good at it. And that's always been this bug with the APM role in particular. So I mean, moving on 1 year to the most recent research that I published in February, I feel fairly confident that in a relatively small number of years, it's actually going to be unusual to do any of this stuff at property. Having gone from thinking for the longest time, well, REITs took this off site quite a while ago. Why didn't everyone else follow suit? I now think everybody is going to figure this admin thing out.
There is one friction point, Dom. There is one other friction point there, which is in the current model, if you have a third party manager in place and the accounting is being done on site, that accounting work is being done on your dime, Mr. Owner. If you centralize the accounting, now you've shifted that cost to the third-party property management company. Now they've got to, because to try to allocate out your time between your different owners, like nobody wants to, every owner's like, nah, you're charging me too. Like nobody wants to deal with that. So that's probably some of the friction with the third-party businesses. Like, nah, I don't really want to take that cost on if I can get the owners to pay for it.
Okay, now you've located the hobby horse that I've been on since the NMHC numbers came out, the new NMHC numbers came out a couple of weeks ago. So one of the things that I noticed in the through the 20 for 20 interviews this year, like in 2023, that was the first time I heard about some fee managers, some third party managers who are starting to offer different formulas for staffing properties where, for example, if you're doing, you can either hire an assistant property manager into a new deal, or you can purchase, there's a menu of like admin services that I provide centrally, and you purchase them from me on a per unit per month basis, similar way to how you would buy like software. That, I suspect, I've been talking about this to various people a lot lately, but that's a very, still quite a new model, right? There aren't that many companies that I'm aware of that are doing it, but I don't see how that doesn't become a disadvantage when people start, when the deal pipeline starts to speed up again. And, you know, you've got a lot of fee managers competing with each other for new business. If I only offer the, you know, hire an FTE and bill it back to the company model for delivering service, I don't see how that doesn't become a disadvantage if I'm up against competitors that say, here are these services that you can buy from me and here's what they cost.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's smart. That would be a good solution for it, because you have the same tension with trying to centralize maintenance on a third party, because like you've got a central pot of maintenance people and they spend some time at this property and not a little time at a different property, or a regional manager who's not assigned to just one client. You've got multiple clients. Like the infighting over how much I'm getting billed versus the guy next door and is all problematic, but ultimately is costing everybody money unnecessarily, probably.
It's interesting. So the so maintenance, leasing, and admin seem to be following very different paths towards centralization. And I think this year, through some of the answers that I got during the research, I've got a better idea of why that is, right? So admin continues to be the thing that's moving the fastest. People are centralizing that more quickly than anything else. It's because there's nothing that attaches that work to the property. The fact that you, in fact, if I'm considering going from three to two people on a property, that decision is much more about coverage than it is about that where that work is done. Like the APM's work can be taken completely offsite. That then means, how do I cover the number of hours that I want to cover from a service perspective at the property? That's the thing that people tend to grapple with. Leasing, you centralize some of the activity. You essentially outsource some of the activity to the customer because you're making everything self-serve. So you just don't need that person to always tour somebody and always man the phones and that kind of stuff like you used to. So you are sort of automating or a lot of that, or self-serving that work away, so it kind of doesn't exist anymore. But you still seem to need some capacity to tour people. Like you can't go to like zero leasing agents. Like even UDR, I heard on a panel, if they're leasing up a property, they do it with leasing agents in the property. Like if you really, so there are lots of situations where you need somebody to be able to tour somebody and close the deal on a lease. So you need some degree of capacity, and because we know that lots of properties are far apart from each other in the same portfolio, that kind of means you're probably always going to have some staff to do that. So it's not quite as flexible as admin is. You can't get rid of that work from the property altogether, but you can greatly reduce it, streamline it, make it more efficient, effective, and so on. Maintenance, there's a very limited extent to which you can automate or you can automate away maintenance activities. You can be way more efficient. You can save a lot of money, but you you know, ultimately somebody has to show up and fix the fridge, right? It's and until they have robots that do that, like you just need the people to do that work, which means, yeah, that formula I was just talking about. So if I'm a fee manager and I want to charge you a fee to provide these admin services, so you don't need that person or property to do those anymore. I can't offer that formula with maintenance, because I can't do your maintenance virtually for you. Maybe I can run a maintenance call center for you and have a more tech enabled triage and and dispatch function. Maybe there's stuff like that I could do centrally. But there still have to be people in this local market, and for the reasons you said, like the idea of dividing up, maintenance resources between two or three different owners in a market, I suspect that model would last up until the first serious complaint came to the desk of an asset manager.
Well, let's put a pin in maintenance for a second, because there's a lot to unpack there. Thank you for joining us at this week's episode of the Apartment Academy podcast. The Apartment Academy is a production of Leonardo 24/7, the industry's leader in multifamily operations and maintenance software. At Apartment Academy, we realize the hard work that goes into property management and the stress that comes along with it. Leonardo 24/7 takes the guesswork out of your team's day-to-day by providing customized daily guidance on tasks that need to be done, guaranteeing consistent operations across your entire portfolio. To learn more, visit www.leonardo247.com today.